Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
Hello, sweet patrons. Patreonons.
Patreononicon.
Thank you.
Do you know the old radio rule, Mike, that you've just broken?
No.
Just speak to that one person, mate. You got to speak to one person.
Is it?
Yes. Is
it? How do you pick?
That's what Terry Wogan always said.
I was about to say that's what Terry Wogan always used to say. Okay. So you don't say, hi, everyone.
You say, hi, Susan.
You say, hi, Susan Stevenson. You choose one person. You target it all at Susan Stevenson.
Hope to God she's listening.
Hope to Christ.
Hi, Susan Stevenson. How's the dog? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Sorry to hear about your sister-in-law.
Yeah.
But not that sorry, bearing in mind.
I didn't visit.
Not enough to visit.
No.
And thanks for the chocolates.
So you should have said, Mike, hello, patron.
Hello, patron.
No, you shouldn't. I'm going to interject again. It's patron.
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 It's like the peppers.
Hola, patron.
Hola, patron.
Hola, patron.
Okay, fine. No, sorry, no, you're right. It is hello, patron. It's not hello, Patreons, which has taken the podcasting community several years to get that straight.
Mm. Okay.
You join Patreon and you become a patron.
Okay. Well, hello, you. Yeah?
Yeah, I think that's safe.
That works.
Check that.
Yeah. It's quite a handy feature of our language, isn't it?
Welcome to Extra Beans.
Welcome indeed.
And what an Extra Beans have we got in store for you, I wonder, Ben. Can you tell us?
Well, I've not edited it yet, so I've got no idea.
Holy moly.
I've got the inside scoop and I've looked it up. I've done a bit of homework and everything.
Oh, nice one. Can I say you're really looking up the Wizard Steve?
Wizard Steve.
Wizard Steve. We're looking up the Wizard Steve. We're getting the Steve scope out.
We've got the Steve-a-scope out.
It's flexible rods. We're going all the way up deep into Steve. I'll tell you what's up there. Give you a little bit of a clue as to what we might have been talking about at the beginning of the month.
Okay.
I can see. Ooh, what can I see? I can see a little chicken leg. Ooh, it's swimming around in a bit of gravy. And what's that? Ooh, is it? There's a little bit of a sort of roasted carrot baton. Okay. Is that some cauliflower cheese? Could it be?
Is that an entire Viennetta?
Brasseries. It's our brasserie special. What is it? A savoury Viennetta?
It's savoury Viennetta, a.k.a. Sunday roast.
Oh, pull up a chair, get a couple of spaniels under each arm, put your head in the fireplace.
That's four spaniels in all.
No, wrap yourself up around a crossword, stick a couple of billiard balls down your trousers, and put on a dartboard hat, because we're about to have a pub lunch.
Potentially.
Yeah? Maybe.
You can also
be at home.
Yeah. Or a carvery or even a hotel, you know, potentially.
Yeah.
Out to a Tupperware and a bus stop.
Yeah. Wherever you get it. And even whatever your day you're doing it on. Oh, or maybe that's a big topic right there. Is there such a thing as a Monday roast?
Oh, I love me Monday roast.
Yeah.
I like to have a Monday roast for breakfast on Monday.
Yeah, so you really feel like you've stolen a march on the rest of the nation. Waiting a week.
It means I'm going to have a meaty week, because my wife makes meat. She makes good meat.
All right, Sunday roasts.
Sunday roasts.
So the thing is, Ben, for you, it's hard to replicate that feeling that a roast gets under the lights, isn't it, in a carvery? Because is it like a halogen light? What kind of lights are they under?
The sort of heat lamp.
A proper heat lamp.
Is it a proper heat lamp?
Yeah, kicking off a lot of heat, yeah.
Oh, is that what it is? So is that slowly cooking it throughout the day as well, slightly? Or what's the idea?
No, it would have been cooked 2 or 3 weeks before and then it's just kept warm.
Of course. That's right. Yeah.
And then the lamps are used in the day to warm the food, food warm, and then at night is to keep the lizards warm who work in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So they can keep going.
Well, they found that the skins that lizards shed actually are a much cheaper way of making gravy, isn't it, if you just boil those down. And here we are. We've arrived at the topic of dark gravy. We've been tiptoeing around it.
So my dream is to, you know, we've had the roast now. Probably, it's probably been in a similar form for what, 200 years or something? How long do we reckon it's kind of been the same?
Oh, well, the history of the roast goes all the way back to the...
Well, it's Dickens. Chaucer, and it's...
You know what? I bet the roast is another of those things. It was invented by the Victorians. And actually, probably up until that point, right? And Britain only ate risotto. Everyone ate mushroom risotto and occasionally asparagus risotto. It was only after the Victorians came in that that became the vegetarian option.
But my dream, Henry, is to move the roast on to its next form, roast 2.0, or what I'm calling, why don't you come round for a boil? Everything's boiled from the top to the bottom.
You can do it in one container.
A Thursday boil.
That could take over from the air fryer, couldn't it, as the latest kind of trendy thing to have, a big pot. You could call it Big Pot.
The BP boiler.
Big Pot cooking. The Big Pot boiler with Big Ben.
You've got a Monday night flambé, haven't you? You could just mix it up every day of the week. You
can't really flambé in a boil situation, I'm afraid. But you can replicate flambéing just with a longer boil. You can get closer. It's all about... Because the thing with boiling is all you've got really to adjust is time. Because the boiling temperature point of water is 100 degrees. And that doesn't change.
At sea level.
Assuming you're at sea level. And in a moderate pressure area in terms of air pressure. Yeah, because all you can control with boil... Because water boils at boiling point. Exactly. And then they become steam, at which point it's not your problem anymore. So all you can control with boiling is the amount of time that it's in the boiling situation, because you can't really have a lower or a higher boil.
Well, unless you put salt in the water, I suppose.
What is simmering then, Henry? What is simmering?
I am, with all these silly bloody questions.
Because I think you're right about you're right that there's only one temperature, but you can have a rolling boil, you can
That's
have a
true.
Simmer.
There's a rolling
What's
boil.
The difference?
Simmering is quite hard to... Well, one of the problems I've always had with boiling, because we've talked about this before, but and Mike obviously wasn't listening because doesn't think I know anything about roasting food and making meals, but... parboiled potatoes. Because we're getting into that time of year where you're going to be thinking about parboiling potatoes. And there's this problem, which is they say boil the potatoes for 10 minutes, let's say. Hmm. But once the water is boiling, the potatoes go in, the temperature of the water lowers. So when is the 10 minutes starting from? It's basically impossible to boil something for 10 minutes, I think. Yeah.
We did get quite a lot of correspondence about it as well, didn't we, in the end?
I think we did, yeah.
I think the recommendation was that if you used a 4,000-gallon boiling vat, then you can start it from as soon as the potatoes go in, because it won't make a difference.
Or is it about pre-boiling the potatoes so that they're already boiling once you put them in?
Yeah.
So you boil them you boil them separately, but you don't tell anyone about it.
You certainly don't tell them.
You don't tell them.
No.
They do not. It's on a need-to-know basis with those little buggers. One thing I'll say about roasts. So one thing I do know about roasts... This is something that not a lot of people know how to do, and it's not that hard, is making your own gravy. Fine, fuck it. Let's go to email. Let's go to email. Let's go to emails. It's fine. I'm done. I'm fine. Look, it's just this is a job at the end of the day. So let's move on. You would be shit, both of you, as like BBC interviewers, because you ask, you know, the president of the European Union a question, it cuts back to you and you're both fucking looking at your phone or whatever. You need to be able to do the bit where you go, oh, right, yeah. That's part of being, you know, that's part of talking to someone.
Yeah. Oh, well. There might be just one listener who has actually come to this podcast in the hope that they finally get a recipe for a decent homemade gravy.
Exactly.
They came so close.
And they're going home empty-handed.
Okay, so now I'm pushing the internal camera that we've put into Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A bit further up. So we're going up through the gut, up through the stomach.
And that's never been done with Steve before, so it's unprecedented, which is much like this next episode, which is also unprecedented.
Hang on, every episode's unprecedented.
But this was even more unprecedented. Unprecedented.
Precedented?
It was pre-precedented. Pre-precedented. Non-post-precedented. Because this was an episode of The Beans
recorded when all three beans were in the very same room.
Oh, yes, of course.
Right. In a lightly themed hotel.
Do you know what? I found out why it's themed.
Why? Yeah.
So a bean listener got in touch because we talked about how it was lightly themed and we weren't really sure why.
And the theme was games, right?
Yeah.
Well, the theme was Cluedo because Cluedo was invented in Leeds.
Was it really?
Yes.
I'm going to say,
That's not true, though, is it? As I said it, it's American, isn't it, Cluedo?
Also, I'm just wondering if that's the least interesting fact I've ever heard.
Oh,
sorry, no offence.
Probably some offence.
It doesn't matter, does it, that it was...
I don't think it's American, because they call it Clue, don't they?
Yeah, so which came first? Oh, no, here he goes. It's a British board game. Yeah. Manufactured by Waddington's. Sounds like a very Leeds-based company, I'd say. Waddington's.
Yeah.
Yes, founded by John Waddington of Leeds.
They do board games and they do deep, dark gravy stock cubes.
But it's not prominent elsewhere. We walked around quite a lot of Leeds. We didn't see any other clues about that, about Cluedo, did we?
We didn't, did we?
It's not like the Beatles. It's not celebrated as the Beatles are in Liverpool, for example.
That's true.
Yeah. Mike, here's a fact you're going to love about Waddington's from the Wikipedia. Please. In 1941, so already Mike's in.
Yeah.
The British Directorate of Military Intelligence 9, brackets MI9, had Waddington's create a special edition of Monopoly for World War II prisoners of war held by the Germans.
Nice.
What, which they airdropped into the prison, into the concentration camp so the British POWs could play the games?
It's a great question as to how they would have got hold of those.
Because by the time you've broken the board games in, you might as well use the same passage to break the actual people out.
Oh, I see. So what they did... Okay. So basically, they would send things to the prisoners of war, which they were allowed to do.
Yeah, well, they get Red Cross packages and things like that.
Oh, did they? Oh, okay.
But in it, within the Monopoly, were maps.
See, MI9, we've talked about MI9 before. I've got my MI9 book somewhere. That was the Escape and Evasion gang.
So they'd hide a secret map inside the Monopoly game?
Yes.
And a map to what?
To get out of the wherever they've been kept.
Hiking trails in the Peak District. So you've got this to look forward to if you break out. Does it help to sort of...
Is Mike going to look it up in his MI9 book? Here we go. MI9, Escape and Evasion, 1939 to 1945 by M.R.D. Foote and J.M. Langley. Yeah.
Is it the most provincial dad book of all time?
And my grandfather, my Polish grandfather, was a bomber pilot. He had one of the buttons on his uniform jacket had a little mini compass hidden within it.
For this
reason, Escape and Evasion, in case they... Yeah.
And inside that, there was a secret, even smaller button.
Yeah.
In case he
lost a button.
And inside that was a tiny version of Buckaroo.
which could only be played with tweezers.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the precursor of Cube Ranch, really.
But, yeah. So can you look up Monopoly in the Index?
Cube Ranch?
What's that?
Cube Ranch?
As Cube Ranch, as in the James Bond, like the inventors. That's what these guys did.
I think it meant Cube Ranch, which could be a good name for meat processing plants in the future.
Am I looking up Cluedo or Wadding? What am I looking up?
Monopoly.
Monopoly.
Let's see if it's real.
There's nothing on Monopoly, and I don't remember Monopoly coming up.
Oh, maybe
Waddingham, was it? I can't remember.
Waddington's.
Waddington's. There's nothing on Waddington's either.
Oh, okay. Who do we believe, your book or Wikipedia?
I have read this book, but I've read it a long time ago. I might have to revisit it. It's one of those books that it's absolutely jam-packed with info. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like reading, like, Killing Thatcher or something like that, where they've tried to, or a Ben McIntyre, where there's a bit of a story and a narrative thrust. It's literally, here's a list of some places and some people and some stuff that happened. Yep.
It's basically got the readability of the instructions to a humidifier.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
I've forgotten what I was going to say, but it involved me.
Okay. Have you ever been a prisoner of war? Anyway, here's some more stuff from our episode about Antarctica.
Yes, please.
Yeah, I was always the wrong. I am the wrong age. I get into things at the wrong sort of period. As we may have discussed on the podcast.
Are you trying to say you want to go to Laser Quest today?
I think I might want to go to Laser Quest this afternoon.
Okay.
I played with toys longer than most of my friends.
Yeah.
Which I'm cool with. And, you know, that's cool, isn't it?
I don't know about. I don't think that's the way I'd put
it. Because I had a vivid imagination.
I think it comes as no surprise to anyone listening.
Yeah. So I played with toys and I loved. I'm just remembering now. One of the things I loved the most was essentially playing at sort of sci-fi war, or just war, with my friend William.
Mm-hmm.
And was he real?
Well, put it this way. If you don't think he was real, then maybe you should take it up with his magic horse, Brandor, who he'd always fly around to visit me on.
Yeah. On your birthday.
On my birthday.
The sad bit about this, Mike, is only Brandor is real.
Well, I'm not. Yeah. So I played with toys a lot, and I love playing with my friend William. So William was real. He lived around the corner from me.
Mm-hmm.
And we would, his dad had an allotment.
Okay.
And we'd go to visit his allotment with his dad. And me and William would run around the allotments, just shooting at each other. Go behind a tree. Oh, get them. Oh, yeah, over there. Mm-hmm. Everyone does that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
That I think was brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing's been quite as good as that, I don't think. Hiding behind a tree, me and William. Go. Ooh.
Yeah, I was reflecting on this recently, like the amount of time I spent between the ages of what, like 5 and 12, imagining I had a gun in my hand.
Yeah.
Mm. Was like all of the time. And I was going to ask you, Mike, as a modern father.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you don't have boys, so maybe it's slightly different.
Well, I don't know, because it hasn't been a thing with daughters. That's definitely not been a.
But it kind of feels like in the modern era, that would be something that maybe you'd try and discourage, or you maybe wouldn't foster somehow.
No, definitely that's true. Some parents do worry about that, I think, with their boys. I think,
but I haven't turned into like a guerrilla fighter.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? Because I was the same. Why is it? Or how is it? Is that essentially military propaganda working?
Yeah.
That is that like a society that that's structured around?
The hero is a fighter.
The hero is a fighter.
Is armed.
But is that essentially a society that's structured around creating armies?
Yeah.
You're squatting behind the big log. William, get your head down. They're coming. Lob a grenade over there.
It's so fun.
It's so good. Nothing's been better. Why is that genetically hard? Is it genetically hardwired?
I don't think it's genetic.
I think it's in the. It's so. Societies have so deeply ingrained this. It's in all the films, in all the TV shows, in all the cartoon characters. It's kind of there somehow.
Because, we were watching He-Man.
Yeah,
I guess he was more sword-based.
But there'd be the odd laser pistol in that.
Yeah. So a lot of the stuff we were watching was gun and sort of violence-based, really.
And there was...
I think particularly liked things where they were combining swords with lasers. Do you know what I mean? That was,
But the other weird thing about it is that it's seriously the least fun job in real life.
Oh, okay, of course.
Like literally the worst.
Yeah.
But we thought it was the best, the funnest thing to do as kids or to play at. I think it's something to do with just, it's to create armies, isn't it? But it's a leftover, I guess.
Yeah.
From some...
Welcome to Sociology 101. What were peasant boys doing in like... sort of early 15th century.
I think they were.
You've asked the right person.
Yeah.
To ask Ben.
You know, I mean, were they pretending they had a battle axe and a.
Yeah, yeah, I think they were hitting each other with logs, weren't they, basically?
Yeah.
I think the little wooden sword, isn't it? The little wooden sword is what they would have played with.
Mm-hmm.
And little bow and arrow.
And praying to the Almighty.
Mm.
Yeah.
That their sister's scrofula stops. Whatever scrofula is. Is that an ideal disease? Maybe it's an evil disease?
It probably is.
Wasn't it a sort of tuberculous sort of skin lesion?
Okay, yeah.
But yes, I remember really enjoying that. And then obviously you get to an age where you can't do that anymore. And I think that's where Quasar should have come in.
Oh, I see, as a kind of methadone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But missed the boat on that. And then paintball, for some reason, is only really possible at stag dudes.
Well, there's another one now, isn't there? What's it called? It's like, it's not BB guns, but it's air something. There's another one that isn't. Again, you're firing projectiles of some sort.
Sort of recreational rubber bullets experience.
Yeah. But it's, but you're firing something. but it's
strafe a crowd of rioters.
Yeah, yeah. It's not paint. It's like small bits of plastic or something.
Right. That sounds terrible.
Well, I guess obviously things like Fortnite is this, isn't it?
That's
all
true.
That stuff. Yeah.
I actually play Fortnite, which is a bit embarrassing.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you?
It's the only computer game I play, and I think it's just me versus the world's 14-year-olds, basically.
And do you play it as Bonjamin, the most amoral player in the history of the game? He's hiding inside a medical pack. That's not even possible.
He shot my neck off. He's disguised as Mother Teresa. Yeah, it's one of my few little pastimes where I totally turn my brain off, but I'm a bit old for it, really.
Well, that's. But what about me? Because I'm thinking of getting into it now, or getting a computer, getting into some gaming.
What would be? Because I don't game. What's the appropriate gaming for the older gentleman?
This feels like something our listeners could help with.
Yeah, yeah. Is there one? Like, yeah. Can you sort of build a full size snooker table with a friend in Denmark?
A virtual snooker table with a real friend in Denmark. Virtual friend in Denmark.
Yeah,
but a real.
Or at least, yeah, it might be someone in Gabon using an avatar to pretend to be a virtual friend in
Denmark.
And
you know what would be great to have? You could set certain levels of difficulty. So, for example, it's a snooker table, but it's a slightly diagonal room.
Yes.
Yeah.
And your cues are twice as long as usual.
And the Danish guy's a bit of a dick.
Advanced level. Dick. Yeah. And then whoever refurbished the cellar where you're making it, the floor's got a bit of an incline, actually.
It's got a massive slope, so you're going to have to compensate for that with the table surface. That's
it's a pretty decent game, this.
Quite a decent game.
Yeah.
There's also, I think, one you'd really like, Mike. I think it's on the Nintendo Switch.
Mm.
It's called Knock Through. And it's when you knock through from your living room into your kitchen, you create a sort of kitchen diner.
Oh, lovely, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bit of extra light.
Yeah, lovely bit of extra light, yeah. But will you have to get a structural engineers come around to make sure that you're...
You've got to be careful about those load-bearing pillars, haven't you?
That's right.
Yeah.
But great for hosting, especially if you then don't want to host afterwards and you just want a bit more space to yourself.
Yeah. And also remember, if you get the dodgy tradesman giving you advice, remember to use the cannon to shoot him his head
off. Hammer the X key.
Hammer the X key. Machine gun that guy to fuck.
Yeah. And then, bury him in the cement.
Bury him in the cement.
You're having delivered tomorrow.
Yeah.
Oh, no, the council have arrived. Hammer the X key.
Hammer the X key.
Yeah, this sounds like great stuff.
My partner occasionally plays computer games kind of in the winter. She sees it as a kind of a winter.
A sort of hibernation sort of thing. Yeah.
Okay.
She did one where you walk around a ship where all of the people on the ship have died or disappeared, and you have to work out why and what happened.
Oh, I like that.
And it's very kind of
calming. Well, that's good. That's the bit of the Cluedo that was missing. Okay, the whys and the wherefores.
Is it one? So there are two, or maybe three types of computer game in my mind. There's ones where you it's information based, where you have to sort of use information to solve things or plan things. And there's one where you're just literally walking around the room, picking stuff up, chucking stuff at people, punching things.
Yeah.
That's the kind of one I prefer.
Okay. Second one.
The second one.
It's more cathartic, is it? So that's your Gran Turismo, your...
Yeah. You're in the world, you're in the room, you're smashing stuff up.
Yeah.
You've got like a funny fox sidekick, potentially.
Yeah.
And you're jumping on top of things, you're collecting coins, that kind of stuff I like.
Yeah. You're doing things that would be reputationally damaging were you to do them in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
We're just hanging out with a fox for that long. People would start asking questions.
That's reputationally damaging.
Henry's nice, but he's always got an actual urban
calls
fox.
It his sidekick, but it is.
Yeah. And how did you get that fox to wear that waistcoat? Like a human small waistcoat? Or did you get it made by a tailor? It cost a fortune. Honestly, what's going on with Henry?
What's category three?
Sport?
Oh, I suppose so, yeah.
Yeah.
I do like that stuff. I like FIFA.
But that's as in, like, toggles.
Toggles, mate, yeah.
What do you mean, toggles?
Yeah,
well,
toggles.
Well, as in, like, I think of you know the sort of thing you'd play Street Fighter on? Those toggles.
Do you mean like a game, a controller?
Yeah, console.
Yeah. It's not
rather
toggles,
than
it's not
like,
toggles,
what's the one where you have a sort of a virtual tennis racket or a...
Oh, a Nintendo
golf club
Wii.
And, yeah, that stuff. Is that, which one do you mean?
I didn't understand any of the categories that you've just laid out or any element of of the propositions you've made.
Okay.
So, I mean,
you've got
me on the back foot in terms of answering that question.
When you say sport, do you mean one where you're sat as you are now?
Oh, yeah.
With a set of toggles?
Yeah. They're not called toggles, for the love of God.
I think a lot of our listeners will be sort of weeping and gnashing their teeth.
Yeah. Or are you stood up wearing a pair of VR gloves with a...
like a VR tennis racket.
No, yeah. Not that.
Cricket bat.
No, not little
full face mask.
Yeah. No, it's joypad. Joypad stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
Virtual reality, that's one of those technologies that's been threatening to be about to change our lives since the 80s. Yeah, it's just, yeah. It never quite
yeah.
happens.
Yeah.
But no, I've played football, you know, computer football games since the beginning of home computers, pretty much. And it's quite interesting to see the evolution. So I played one in the 80s on a computer. So there was Spectrum and 48K Spectrum. But before that, there was one that my American friend at school had called Texas Instruments.
Oh, what?
Have you ever heard of that?
No.
It was even before the Spectrum, I think. It was called Texas Instruments. The level of abstraction from real football was so extreme. So what happened in their version of soccer was you'd be a little stick man,
yeah.
and you could go up and down the pitch. It was left to right, but only on right angles. So you'd be sort of...
yeah, you couldn't go diagonally.
You couldn't go diagonally. And then you'd get the ball, and when you had to pass the ball, you pressed a button, and at that point, your character essentially turned into a clock with an arm going round. Yeah. And then when it was at the angle you wanted to hit the ball, you press the button again, and it would shoot off at that angle.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was very, very abstracted from football. Then there was one called International Soccer. That was on the Commodore 64. And there were various cheats you'd realize eventually. Like, if you got the ball at a certain angle in relation to the goal, this was left to right, and you just passed it diagonally into the net, the keeper would just do this. He would just jump on the spot.
Oh.
And it would just go straight in. So it was always about finding the hacks and the ways around
it.
Yeah,
okay.
And the other one was, from the kickoff, you could take the ball if the other player would run ahead of you, and if you timed your pass perfectly, you could chip it onto his head, and it would bounce up and down on his head as he ran up the length of the pitch.
Oh,
no one could touch him. And then at the end, it would just fall onto his foot, and he would pass it into the goal and score.
Are you actually allowed to do that in real football?
It would be the most...
It would be within the rules.
But can you do that? You can head it to yourself repeatedly.
In theory, but it would be the most incredible goal that's...
You know, in a weird way, you could argue...
Is someone somewhere training for that?
But you know what? You could argue, couldn't
some
you?
Some kid in Colombia.
It would be worth it to train... if you wanted to, you know...
The wild card player.
To train a wild card player
in the 87th minute.
Yeah, who no one's ever seen him play. He's in your squad, and all he does, he's a circus man.
Yeah.
he's a circus skills person that has trained. And then the final 3 minutes of the Champions League final. Yeah. Hang on, they've brought on Alfonso the Magnificent. We've never seen this person play football.
The disgraced Portuguese acrobat.
Hang on, does that dove need a shirt number?
Because thinking about it, if you were bouncing the ball on your head.
Yeah.
You couldn't be legally tackled, right?
Oh, that's a good point.
Because I think to tackle, you have to go for the ball, right?
Mm. Yeah.
And you can't put your foot above a head height.
No.
So we've hacked it.
We've hacked football.
Except.
We're going to win the World Cup.
Except the other team might be onto it. Hang on, they're bringing on the three tumbling Mexican Sanchez triplets. And they can be sat on top of each other's shoulders, and they can come down and head the ball off the head of the other guy.
Bigger and bigger towers of footballers.
Yeah. Or, you know, the other thing you could do, technically, what if you could, and I'd be up for doing this, if you could have a player... He doesn't even train that much, but all that happens is you stretch his skin a little bit every day around his tummy to create a kind of...
A basket.
A human flesh basket that hangs off his body.
Yeah.
And you just chip the ball into that.
Yes.
And essentially it's a bag made of human flesh that's hanging off the person.
So you just have to find someone you're willing to be marsupialized.
That's all you need is... But for the, you know, for the salaries they get, Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah? I'd be marsupialized. Give me a dorsal fin or do anything. Whatever you want.
Just to let people in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Moments before we started recording this, I stubbed my toe. It's the worst stub of my life. I'm still...
Is it still throbbing?
Still yeah.
Have you looked at it yet?
No, I can't. I can't break myself.
Take the sock off.
No. That's staying on there, that sock, for the next month.
Yeah, I've had that kind of thing before. It hurts so much you just don't want to look at it.
Yeah.
You just hope that the human body has a way of fixing it. Often it does.
Yeah.
It'll create a kind of huge calloused stump, probably. or something, you know what I mean?
Like one of those pigeons you see.
Yeah. It'll become like one of those pigeons you see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a few weeks' time, you'll think you've tripped over and fallen on something. You haven't. It's just your foot has come away.
Yeah. But, you know, I think because the human pain, we've talked about this before, but pain is essentially an information system. It's kind of an early form of sort of
facts.
Facts. It's a kind of intrahuman sort of
Post office?
Also email system in a way.
Yeah. Right.
It's how the body sends messages of like, don't put your hands in there.
Yeah.
Don't put your knee around around that. Yeah. Yeah, don't do that.
It's a memo in the pigeonhole, isn't
it? It's a memo in the pigeonhole.
Yeah.
But it's quite a bad one.
Yeah.
So for example, you know, it's your body's trying to tell you, don't whack your foot up against chairs. You stupid tosser.
Yeah.
But also, it's put that angle on, hasn't it? It's quite nasty.
Yeah.
But also, you know that. And also, why did you do it then?
But we all know people like that will tell you you've bogged up after you know you've bogged up.
You know you've bogged up.
And that's what we all know.
And we're always saying that kind of thing, aren't we? I've bogged up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When Mike said that computers were played with toggles.
Yeah, he bogged up.
With his duffel coat based computer system. The Submariner 1.
Well, that sounds good.
I think toe stubbing is one where it hurts more than it's bad. Like,
yes,
stubbing
your
toe isn't that bad. It's
apart
actually okay.
from, I would say, one time in 30 where it is as bad as it.
And it's actually got it bang on.
It's actually, you've whoopsied.
You've shattered your femur.
I think so.
Wait, what? Is it not?
It's gone all the way up to his femur.
It's all gone all the way up to his femur. Yeah. No, because the bone, think about it, the bones, it's like one of those things, isn't it, where the
skeletons.
Beg your pardon?
Carry on.
Where the metal ball goes donk and then.
A Newton's cradle,
and the other one goes up.
Yeah. Mm.
The human body's like that. You could whack it there and you're...
Shatter all the bones all the way up.
Yeah. And then your nose
falls... Like a windscreen.
Yeah, and your nose just falls off.
Yeah, it's a safety measure, really. It's like the front of a Skoda coming to pieces.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's about aborting. It's about absorbing the blow. It's a bit like the way they build Japanese buildings to be earthquake-proof.
So that we aren't damaged when Ben stubs his toe.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's why all Japanese buildings have a large nose on the top, which will just fall off.
And an unusually long toe at the bottom.
That's right.
Yeah. This is from Jay.
Hello, Jay.
Dear Beans, I've just left the City Varieties in Leeds, having seen you live.
Oh, okay. The stakes have been raised.
Yeah, okay.
I just overheard a couple from the show. Mm. I mean, I guess they mean a couple who also went to see the show.
Yeah.
One of them said to the other, "Did you know that Alice is related to Nigel Havers?"
Ooh.
I have no idea who Alice is, but I wanted you to be the first to know. This could be your way in to a deep and meaningful relationship with the man, the legend, Havers.
Good
love from
heavens.
Love from Jay.
It's good. And I think we as a society are trained to frown on eavesdropping, but it's got its uses, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And also, we discussed Mr. Nosey, didn't we?
Yeah.
In the live show.
In the live show.
I think Jay is now officially part of the intelligence and security wing of Three Bean Salad.
They said Alice...
So someone in our audience knows somebody called Alice who is related to Nigel Havers.
And the question they asked their friend was, did you know that Alice was related to Nigel Havers?
So we don't know if that person did know or not.
Did they know?
Jay may know.
Does Jay know?
Jay might be like teasing this stuff out.
Yeah. So are we saying that Alice is definitely related to Nigel Havers right now? I mean, but that's pretty much a cast iron fact. Is that what we're saying?
that's been...
The only thing that's in doubt is whether this person's friend knows.
We don't know how reliable the narrator is. Do you know what I mean? Jay, I trust.
Yeah, I trust Jay.
I trust Jay with my life.
But Jay is the narrator.
No, Jay.
Well, there's a play within a play with an email within an email.
Joe is the documentarian of the narrator.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Jay is the sort of Geoffrey of Monmouth figure.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay.
Because the question in my mind,
as in like reliable to a point, but also our only source for the time.
Yes. Yeah.
But also, to me, there's two ways that question could be interpreted. One is, essentially, do you know if Alice is related to Nigel Havers?
No.
Like an open inquiry?
Yeah. Or do you know that she's...
No, because the first one is insane. Because you can't... That'd be like me saying to you, do you know if John Robbins is related to Nigel Havers?
I'm pretty sure he isn't.
There we go. So, I mean, like, it's a brief conversation.
I've perfectly enjoyed that.
That conversation is happening tacitly, implicitly, all the time.
Oh, yes,
24
right.
hours a day, all the time.
Yeah,
I'm having that conversation with Ben million times
and
a second.
And the human brain is so sophisticated that it can do that. Yeah. It can process. It's not related to Nigel Havers, not related to Nigel Havers.
Jared Butler, Judi Dench. I mean, it's all
not
being,
related to Nigel Havers.
It's all happening. That's taking up 97% of our brain space at any one given time.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to voice it would be, wouldn't make any
sense. So instead, they're using a linguistic little trick.
A rhetorical trick.
A rhetorical trick,
Let's put it this way. If you are Nigel Havers, email in and let us know if you think that Alice's friend does know if you're related to her or not.
And please, that is only that is directed to the Nigel Havers, not Anne Nigel
not
Havers.
Anne, not Anne or Susan or Beryl Nigel Havers or any of the other women in the Nigel Havers family.
But if you are Alice and you're listening and you are related to Nigel Havers, do let us know. Is he a good uncle? Is he a bad uncle?
But we don't know if it's a niece-uncle relationship, do we?
I was just having fun with it, wasn't
it? Could be a second cousin twice removed.
Oh, sorry. If we could just have fun with it, then fine. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, but I'm feeling there's a strong chance of uncle, even if it's not literal uncle. I think
he's got uncle.
I think he's been given the style uncle.
But you know, well, here's something. I think we can dig into this a little bit.
Okay.
Because why is it that this person, they both know Alice?
Yes.
Thinks that this person might not know that Alice is related to Nigel Havers. That
when
suggests that,
when that's surely the defining thing about Alice.
Surely that's...
Everyone who knows Alice knows
that she's related to Nigel.
Yeah.
No, but it suggests that she might keep her Havers cards close to her chest.
Which you might have to.
For legal reasons.
Well, you know, when the revolution comes...
Havers will be first on the chopping block.
Exactly. If you're one of Havers' brood, you might be like the Romanovs, you know.
Yeah. Because the Havers will be wiped out, won't they?
Yeah. So she could be like the little Anastasia.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
And me with them, frankly.
Yeah.
I will be stood with the Praetorian Guard of the Havers.
You'll go down with them.
Yeah. Well, the next one, we went slightly awry with this one. Although I don't think it was really our fault necessarily. We'd been on the road a lot.
The road does things to you, doesn't it? When you're on the road that long, I mean, we were away for stretches of what?
Sometimes two or three days at a time.
Three maximum.
and always within easy reach of home.
Always within easy reach of home.
It's quite a small nation that we live in.
It is quite a small nation.
But you have to ask yourself, you know, where are you really within yourself when you feel like you're reading signs? Advertising conversations about Donkey Milk soap. So I don't think it's entirely our fault that in this episode we failed to get a topic from Susan.
From Susan.
Yeah.
Susan Stevenson.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, by the way, Susan. Really hoping you're enjoying the episode. And also, by the way, congratulations on the graduation of the twins. yeah
and don't forget to check the oil on the Citroen Saxo, because you did ask us to remind you about that, because it's been on your mind, but there's never a good time.
And we did send you that ancient Welsh Celtic dipstick, it was very much to use, wasn't it? We wanted it to be
a wooden love dipstick. Yes,
it was a wooden love dipstick.
Yeah.
And we don't just want that stuck on your wall, Susan. Yeah. Please get that stuck into your Citroen Saxo. Yeah.
what are we talking about?
We're talking about the listener.
We're talking about the listener, Ben, who you don't seem to give a shit about. Because you've done no research on Susan in her life.
Anyway.
Anyway.
Yeah. Here's more from that episode about Donkey Milk soap, amongst other things.
Can I say, I've just dropped a large globule of coffee onto my shorts. Mm. And you know what? I don't care, because they're my brown shorts, the ones I talked about a few weeks ago, which have become my stain shorts. And I advocate this for everyone. Have a pair of shorts that you wear, which are just your stain shorts. See them as a Jackson Pollock.
Most of my clothes are my stain clothes.
Have stain clothes.
I've got a couple of stage outfits.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it's very much food matter, dog's mess. Yeah.
And it becomes excellence. Like a sort of cheering shroud of your own past. You can look over it and go, oh, yes, I had a Vietnamese dipping sauce. I had some dumplings wearing these shorts.
I tried to
have some dumplings. My shorts had some dumplings.
By the way, Henry, that didn't make it into the main episode.
Are you joking?
Uh-oh. But you'd know that after listening through to all the episodes carefully,
of course,
to give editorial notes.
Don't be silly.
Yeah, so Patreon listeners may have heard you talking
about that. And is there a better ad for joining up on the Patreon? There's a story I've got entirely about a pair of shorts that I've stained loads using Vietnamese dipping sauce. I couldn't get the stain out. There's a little trailer. I couldn't get the stain out. I tried a hot wash. I tried a medium wash before the hot wash. I tried the really hot wash. And eventually I covered it in so much Vanish that I created a huge sort of sulfurous-looking yellow stain.
You don't need to listen now. You've heard it.
No, so there's an advert for saving those pennies in difficult times and not subscribing to Patreon. Because Henry will, of course, when an ad goes, is prompted, he will retell it in full.
It all comes out in the end.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
And often at the beginning.
Can I put forward a point that I think might be right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about a gender-based double standard. I'm not even saying it's a bad thing, but here we go. This book is about mentors shagging women, right? And in general, I think people would be like, that's okay. If I wrote a series of novels in which a guy was shagging loads of dogs or something,
yeah,
people wouldn't be like, oh yeah, put an advert for that on Instagram. They'd be like, this guy needs jailing fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
And kind of rightfully so.
And actually, we're going to jail him in a transparent kind of Zorb type thing and hang him like they used to do with people in...
A gibbet.
Yeah. We're going to hang him he'll be live in the kind of Zorb, so transparent circular globe-shaped prison, which will be hung on a chain outside Battersea Dogs and Cats home. As a warning slash... We're not sure. We haven't thought through what the optics are, actually. It's a bit...
It could be the worst possible thing to do.
It does look like a sort of massive sort of cat's toy, though, doesn't it? That's the only trouble. It might encourage the cats to evolve into mega cats.
Oh no, we've done it. The one thing we said we wouldn't do. Created mega cats.
The book has come real.
And that would create a whole new genre of erotic fiction, actually, wouldn't it? Be with mega cats.
But the thing is, I guess the Minotaur is humanoid, right? It's half human in some way, right?
So you think that's...
So how do you feel about the if it was werewolves or something like that? Do you know what I mean?
Okay, yeah. So
From Jail Free Card, isn't it? There's a human component.
Yes.
And the human component is the part we love.
I see.
Yeah, but the cow bit is the one we bang.
Yeah. It's bang the cow... Talk to the human. Okay, I think that's what we've worked out.
That's the take-home message.
Finally, email from Andrew.
Okay, Andrew.
I've been listening to a lot of episodes of the pod. It seems to have affected my unconscious psyche.
Mm. Yeah, we don't actually recommend that anyone listens to it.
No.
We've never said that, have we? Not once have we said you should listen to it.
No.
Download it, by all means.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe just listen to the adverts. That would help us out.
Listen to the ads. Enjoy the art.
Yeah, we can't recommend listening.
No. But Andrew's done that. And what's happened to him?
Last night I dreamt I was a police officer in a country town. A torrent of bats flew through our squad car window. One knocked itself unconscious and landed on my stomach. I felt jagged teeth around an unmentionable part of my body. When I looked down, I noticed that its mouth, brackets, beak, question mark, was wrapped around my knob.
Oh, God. Mm.
But what's that got to do with... Hang on.
You can't blame us for your own sordid subconscious. We've never advocated that, have we?
I don't think we've ever mentioned
the nearest we've come to that is in this week's episode. So he can't be...
Yeah. No, that's on you, Andrew.
Yeah.
All live long day, I'm afraid. Maybe it is that you're sending bollockings off to every podcast you listen to and every publication you read in the hope that someone says, do you know what, we have been subliminally putting in noshed off country coppers and bats. But I think that's
although to be actually, you know what, it's maybe more of an owl fuckers thing, that, because Eamon Holmes did tell an anecdote recently about how he...
He got dressed up as a country constable and...
Yeah. And collated a bat.
Yes.
I remember. Yeah.
Listen to that. Yeah, it'll be Owlfuckers. Sorry.
Yeah, it'll be Owlfuckers.
It'll be Owlfuckers, unless you don't listen to Owlfuckers, in which case it is just you.
Yeah.
Andrew, and my advice would be to sever any sort of human relationships you have and take yourself away to some sort of hermitage for... period of 7 years.
Because all the donkey milk soap in the world won't cleanse, will never cleanse you. You cannot be cleansed.
Hope that helps.
Oh, that was good. I feel like I've just had a lovely, soft, refreshing bath in donkey milk soap.
No water, just soap.
That's what you do with soap, isn't it? You have a bath in soap, don't you? Henry understands soap. Never let it be said. Oh, Henry does not understand soap.
You cannot throw that aspersion at me. And if you do, it'll slide off because of all the soap I've rubbed into myself. Yeah. No, I have soap months and I have rinse months. So I soap for 1 month and I rinse the next.
And do you do that at home or do you use town planning to go to your local public baths?
Oh,
great question.
Very good.
Yeah, but often I will. Way.
Yeah. Ben got it. Not sure Henry did.
No, I did actually.
Did you?
Yeah. Often I will go down to the local library and go through the old records and find the town planning blueprints for the area to work out where the local swimming baths are rather than just Googling it.
Yeah, very good, yeah. So yeah, here's more stuff from our episode about town planning. Welcome to this, I think, the final episode of this series, I think.
It is, yes.
Yes.
I can confirm.
Okay.
I fact-checked it.
Good.
That's correct. So we'll be wrapping up all those arcs.
All the loose ends.
Loose ends.
The writing team has been working night and day.
Oh, yeah. To make sure that all the threads tie up in a satisfying way. Mm-hmm. There'll be a few teasers as to the next series as well. And I think we'll have one of those montages where sometimes they do this in a series where it's like a kind of a montage with music that's just showing you where all the characters are at right now.
Mm. With a really clear voiceover at the end, so you do understand what the emotional take-home message is, so you don't miss that.
But we'll add a literal, an explanation of the emotional take-home message.
Followed by a cliffhanger.
Yeah. So there'll be me sitting in a pret-a-manger with a new large coffee that they now offer in some branches.
The very old small trousers.
But wearing a pair of very old small trousers. Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Tension in this character's life.
Exactly.
On the one hand, he's looking forward with a new larger pret-a-manger cup that's being offered in some concession stores.
Yeah.
Not all.
So hang on, did they previously not do a large? Or has the large become bigger?
No, so previously they only did one size. It's one of these things where
that was their USP. We don't believe in large.
There was no large. There was just a coffee.
Mm. Because it was French, right? The French don't need a large.
It's not French.
Well, there's nothing French about pret-a-manger, Ben.
Have they been accused of sort of coffee Marxism? Is that what's happened here? What's going on?
I think these things generally have a kind of, because these things are then being rolled out across thousands of stores, every small decision like this is huge for the company and for the profit margins and for, of course, the people that control everything, the shareholders. As we've discussed before, who are these shareholders? If any of them want to get in touch, we know you control everything. So if you want a voice piece, because you never see like the shareholders, they never do a press conference, do they?
No, they don't. But they're always doing really well out of everything.
They're doing really well.
Even it seems like sort of global economic collapses.
Oh, yeah.
They still manage to somehow.
They still do all right.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I reckon like not offering a second size, for example, probably saves them like 8 billion quid a day or something. Mad. Mm.
Or is it the other way around?
Or is it the other way around? And that's where the old trousers come in.
Yeah. The old trousers that only have one bit of sandpaper for rubbing your matches on.
Yes. I was thinking about the sandpaper matches thing. Do you know that, Henry?
Do I know about the sandpaper matches?
The implication
am I
was,
someone
do,
that
do you
rolls
know about
out
this, Henry? You ignoramus. That was the, yeah.
No, I'm someone that rolls out 6 to 7 out of 10 chat in dinner parties, airport lounges, trapped elevators.
Yeah. Multi-faith prayer rooms.
Exactly. Closed down aquariums. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as to car parks,
Suspicious garden centres.
Suspicious garden centres and in the shadow of the Angel of the North. Right, I roll out decent chats. I've got that in my... That's a basic chat bow to have in your chat quiver if you see yourself as a chatsman.
Well, it's just the fact you hadn't brought it up yet.
Mm. And why are you keeping bows in your quiver?
Great question.
Why are you keeping your arrows?
That's because I have exponentially more chat than you can imagine. Where you just have single arrows. I have bows bequeathing more quivers. I have bows that shoot quivers. Bequiver more bows. It's a chat kaleidoscope that never ends.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think we've discussed it on the podcast before.
Oh, have we?
But yeah, that was okay. The idea that... Is everyone hearing that noise?
Yes, I see.
Are you trying to get out of the fact you don't know this?
Hang on, I've just got to...
it sounds a bit like someone Googling something in the background.
I'm trying to Google with my feet. It's quite hard to do, but I have learned how to do it for situations like this. No, that's the idea that Swan Matches had the idea of putting half as many sandpaper strips. Yeah, why have it on both sides when you just have it on one? Yeah. And saved the global Swan Tech, obviously the company the mother company of Swan Matches and of course Swans.
Yeah. Yeah.
It saved Swan Tech billions upon billions of pounds. Didn't it?
Yeah.
Because it was like there was this thing they were paying for they didn't need to do. Anyway, what we're talking about global infrastructure, we're talking about
Norbert Dentressangle.
Exactly. We're talking about dynamic logistics frameworks. We're talking about roll out parameters, both.
We're talking about sleeping in a lorry overnight in a lorry park in Gdansk.
So pretty much, it's on the way back from our gig in Wales, actually. So if you're looking for tickets for the Three Bean Salad Tour.
What do you mean?
You can literally only come to the Glasgow show, which is all we've got left tickets-wise. But do come to that one.
But do come to the Glasgow show.
And those tickets far and wide are available in Pret-a-Manger if they have Wi-Fi and you can get online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, that's just reminded me. Another thing which... Anyway, for fuck's sake. Sorry.
Henry, this is the last show of the season. What's...
I've had one of those sleep situations where I didn't have that good a night's sleep. Mm. I woke up a few times. I dipped into my chilly memoir, which I'm reading, which is going quite well, actually.
Yeah. Hmm. As in it's going worse for them.
It's going worse. Finally, they've hit some real troubles. The ship sank and they're now making their way on foot across the Arctic.
Oh, so it's big heap cozy time for Henry Packer.
Yeah.
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 Okay. By anyone's standards, they're having a mare.
They're having a real mare.
They're having a shocker.
And the dogs have started arguing.
Oh, they haven't yet eaten the dogs. I mean, that's coming, isn't it?
You expect so, don't you?
It's Chekhov's dog, isn't it?
It's Chekhov's dog. It's Chekhov's chilly dog.
These things are the wrong way around. It should be the humans are feeding the dogs with themselves. That's the way it should be.
It should be, shouldn't it? Well, that's when you read the dog sides of these stories. It's very different, isn't it?
Yeah.
The dog Arctic memoirs.
So poor sleep.
Poor sleep. No, but then what happened was I then slept too well. I then finally got off to a really deep, amazing sleep.
I see, and it's still woke fog.
Up. You I woke come up about 40 minutes ago, and I'm still in that state. You know, but on the way back from the Cardiff gig, I went to the Pret-a-Manger in Cardiff station, and there they offered there were big coffees, which is huge for Pret. Mm. That's a huge change,
but not in London. Are they trialing it in Wales?
Maybe they're trialing
in case something goes catastrophically wrong. Is that the idea?
Exactly. We can sacrifice Cardiff. That's what the shareholders have decided. If Cardiff ends up literally drowned in hot boiling coffee.
Unanticipated civil unrest.
Okay.
Yeah, so I came back to London, actually. I asked for one in my local in London. They didn't have it.
No.
They said it's...
Well, that's the thing. Cardiff is ahead.
Cardiff is ahead.
So, corn exchanges.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So
maybe there was physical corn there or not. I don't think... I think a listener will know.
I've got a deeper question, though.
Yeah.
Which is, what actually is corn at the end of the day? And, like, I wonder if corn is a bit like what we were talking about in the first section, to do with the way pineapple juice... I mean, the history of mankind, in a way, is just pineapple juice being repackaged and represented in various ways.
May I say, it's totally possible that the pineapple juice bit won't make it into the episode.
Yeah? Are you Well, okay. In that case, this is podcast Guerrilla War. Because I'm going to talk about pineapple juice to the extent that it has to go in. That's right. I'm holding you to pineapple ransom.
Okay. Okay. Are you suggesting that corn is Europe's pineapple? Is that what you're saying?
No. The way I think it's similar is this: corn is it's a product. Is it what do you call like a really basic product?
A crop.
A sundry. Is that right?
Yeah. Why not?
A staple.
A victual.
Is it a commodity?
I suppose it's used as a commodity in corn exchanges.
Corn is just one of the mega products that's always there, and humanity just repackages it and represents it. And essentially, mankind is just a grotesque sort of worm-like creature that ingests and ejects corn out of its
Welcome
mouth and
to
anus.
The improv economics section with Henry Packer.
That's all we are. We're just machines for processing corn.
Do you know what, Henry? I actually read a book that sort of made this point.
Was it Sapiens by the guy who wrote Sapiens?
Yuval Harari?
Yeah, but he was talking about wheat.
Yeah.
But that's kind of, I don't know. I think a lot of economists and Marxists and people.
Are you saying that corn's in charge? Are we slaves to corn?
So Yuval Harari says that wheat is in charge, doesn't he?
And you're updating that to corn?
Yeah.
When we swapped from being a hunter-gatherer, which was like quite a nice life.
Yeah.
To slavishly creating more and more wheat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The person who benefited was not us because our life became worse. It was wheat.
The other theory that I've read about recently is that there's actually a theory, because Mike was talking about buildings being used to store corn or store crops and stuff, that the whole of sort of modern society is really created out of agricultural surplus. And the idea that initially we were all hunters and gatherers. So we went out, we'd shoot a sparrow.
Put it on the spit. A little bit of oregano.
A little bit of oregano.
A cranberry jus.
A little cranberry jus. And obviously a little bit of Marmite for the umami.
For the umami. And paired with a very crisp Sauvignon Blanc.
Lovely. And if that doesn't fill you up enough, just get a Deliveroo. Maybe you get a pizza.
Go and slingshot a pizza.
Just think of a pizza.
Or maybe ring Delabaroo.
Wow.
Delabaraba, Abbott and Costello and Jabberwockia, Rabies and Do.
Bronze Age story of Abbottoo.
We need a food tie-in.
There's got to be a food tie-in.
There's got to be a food tie-in. Okay. This could be the one sort of hegemononicon.
Hegemononicon.
It's
the hegemononicon.
The one hegemononicon.
Previously just a mythical thought concept.
The hegemononicon. This could be the one hegemononical cultural artifact that just trumps all the others. There's only one product needed now. It's Abbott and Costello or Jabberwocky.
Culture is over.
There's just one box set that everyone rocks. What to do. Which is that, so initially people killed sparrows and they'd gather up like fruit and stuff. Then they started farming and then there'd be too much corn or left at the end of the season.
Yeah.
They'd have to store that in a warehouse. And then the person that run the warehouse, and then you'd have to write an IOU, some corn for next year. And that money and exchange and commerce, and everything just started from that.
And it's so much faff you build a canal so you could send it to Birmingham instead.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Fast forward. Mm-hmm. 200 years, similar things are happening, but a bit more clever, a bit more advanced. Yeah. Fast forward
another 200. It's going to take us a while to get to on that trajectory.
Well, fast forward 20 million years, it's a desert planet, and only people with access to pineapple juice, they're in control of everything.
There's still a lot of plastic corn packaging lying about, though.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Hey?
Mm. Well, that's what the Unter children wear. These like
what?
These children that live in the plains that just all they wear is pineapple packaging, and they can make it to trousers and skirts and stuff. And eventually, they'll rise up and overtake and take over the
desert.
Take over the desert, yeah.
Okay, and then they're starting to town plan all over again.
I think corn exchanges was corn, wasn't it? Oh yeah, so but corn.
Can I say, town planning-wise, off the back of our tour,
yeah.
Can I say a big f*** you to Birmingham?
Okay, but we should add this is not to the people of Birmingham.
No. But, I mean, they have some complicity. They haven't risen up.
No, they will, though, eventually.
Yeah.
Tell me what it was the...
The roads are rubbish.
With Birmingham, my thought was that someone has designed it with the multi-story car park coming first in the backing order.
Yeah.
I do feel like someone could have intervened.
Yeah.
At some point. Because it's got some pretty bits. I mean, where we performed.
Very beautiful.
Beautiful.
Victoria it was like ancient Square. Athens.
It's got some lovely bits along the canal. It's got its good bits. But yeah, someone has... big car park has had too much of a hand in things in the last few decades.
I would say so.
Yeah.
And big one-way system.
And big one-way system. Yeah.
I get so stressed on a one-way system. If I get this wrong,
yeah,
I've got to drive round Birmingham again at rush hour. It's not right.
Yeah. Accompanied by 500,000 people who are doing exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. God. And getting increasingly tense.
Leeds was also a nightmare. Do you remember we drove into Leeds and we had to go through a bus gate?
Leeds, but I have sympathy with Leeds because Leeds, someone there is trying to make it more greener and friendlier to the pedestrian. Central Leeds is good for the pedestrian. If you're there in a private car as an outsider, then you can get in quite sticky territory quite quickly. But I have sympathy with that.
But what if you're...
trying to unload a bean machine into the back of a small theatre?
Exactly.
Yeah, then it's not the sound for you.
Because wasn't there a thing where we got to the theatre and the guy in the theatre said to Mike, don't worry, we just have to write a letter to the council and they'll let you off. It felt very, like, unofficial, didn't it?
But in Leeds, we got access to an incredible bit of town planning, actually, which was, yeah, that car parking spot got given. It was kind of incredible. It was sort of like, they were saying you can just park your car in this alley.
But it felt like it was hugely antisocial to everyone else because it was just a pedestrian alley.
It was a pedestrian alley.
Next to some bins.
There was no car parking space.
And the exit to someone's flat.
There was no car parking space and there was no signage saying anything about car parking.
Yeah.
And they basically said you can park there because of sort of ancient decree, they were saying. They were saying this theatre's been here over 150 years. You can park there.
Society of the Apothecaries have stated that gratuity, players at the music hall.
Yeah.
Shall park their wagons shall where they wagons. May.
And the Guild of Shire Hor Parking will fully get behind you if it goes to call.
Yeah. Newcastle, I thought, feels like a sort of happy medium, maybe. Oh,
Newcastle's beautiful. I'd never been there before, and it's so nice. I went for a walk down to the harboury bit, the quayside.
Yeah.
It looks like New York.
It's a top-draw city.
It's got big sort of bridges and then like the arc of the bridge will go across the top of the building. It's got a
lovely bit of bridge action going on, isn't it? Oh, yeah. they know one end of a bridge from the other, don't they, those guys? Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, lovely stuff.
And just for anyone that doesn't know, one end of the bridge is the bit where you get on at one side and the other end of the bridge will be on the opposite side from the end where you got on. just for anyone that doesn't know one end of a bridge from another, just to... So one will be adhering to the cliff edge.
So what's the other one doing, sorry?
The one you got
going
on.
Over the precipice.
That one's going.
I think you're thinking of diving boards.
Oh, shit.
See, that's why you're not involved in the Newcastle bridge scene.
Oh, that's why.
Of course, Henry lives in a part of the world where before town planning, the city was there, right? It just happened.
That's one of the great things about London. It's the higgledy-piggledy nature of it. You can be walking along a street and you just stumble across an Itsu and then you turn right and then there's another Itsu and you're like, oh my God, and then actually realise I'm in an Itsu.
Exactly where Sir Christopher Wren deigned it should be. Yes.
So London's quite irrational from a town planning point of view.
It's so good for that.
Yeah,
for
that's a nice thing about it. It doesn't really make any sense. It's lots of like conjoined villages and stuff, isn't it, that are sort of evolved. Whereas obviously like a rational city is like New York or something, where it's the old grid system, which is quite weird to be in a city. I always found that really weird when I was in New York. If you stand on one of the big avenues, you can see the horizon at the end of the street. It's so bizarre that. It's a different sort of... And you can place yourself mathematically in the grid. You know exactly where you are. You know exactly how far up and how far across you are mathematically.
Yeah, I really don't like it. It doesn't sit well with me at all. If you go to
it's quite battleships, isn't it?
Well, it's just like, it's all the same. The whole thing's the same. It's so strange. There's no like surprising little vista that pops out.
But I think it's weirdly got a romance to it, counterintuitively. There's something romantic to me about, I'm on the corner of 4th and 17th. Do you mean? Even though that's just a mathematical grid system reference.
Mm.
It's got a kind of romance.
But what if I say this? I'm on Charing Cross Road.
But I don't know where you are on Charing Cross Road, do I?
Near the Rymans.
Which one, though? Which of the three? Which of the three Rymans which are legally on every street in London? We noticed these big, chunky, Victorian, confident buildings in the centre of a lot of the cities we went to.
Yeah. Especially Leeds Town Hall. My word.
Yeah.
Yes.
What a big, confident bomb.
That was punching, wasn't it? It was like, bloody hell, mate.
Yeah.
But also, a lot of these things then, in their ground floors, just have Cafe Nero's, tortillas or chipotles, Superdrug, etc. Isn't it? They're just like, you've got these these kind of these buildings which feel permanent and historical, and then just
Shoe Zone.
And then Shoe Zone.
And some out of order toilets.
And some out of order toilets.
That's a good point.
So that's what town planning is, though, maybe. A lot of town planning is about funneling consumers through as many spending opportunities as possible, right? So you're funneled into the town centre, you're funneled past the Itso, you're funneled through the Rymans in the new Leicester Square Rymans. And if you've seen it, it's a fully transparent Rymans with tubes going through it. And you can sort of ingest it with it. It's a fully sort of mobile Zorb Rymans, which moves around central London.
And it's fully underwater as well, isn't it?
It's fully underwater as well, yeah. They've used glass bottom boat technology, combined it with Zorb technology, and then filled it with loads of pens and lever arch folders. And two slightly bored employees. I can't claim this is my own idea. This is based on a conversation I had with fan of the pod, John Robbins. Because he's a big fan of the countryside.
Yeah.
He was making the point that the one of the big differences between spending time in the countryside and the city is that in the countryside, you're not being funneled through and around spending opportunities.
Right.
You're just in a field. I mean, in theory, you could bid for that pig.
You might be able to pick up some donkey milk soap.
Yeah,
for example. But in the city, you're sort of in a retail zone, aren't you? I really feel that. If I go for a walk in London, I'm walking along retail zones in the form of streets to central squares, which are more kind of centralised retail hubs.
Unless you go to the library. What's it called? Third spaces? That's the thing, isn't it?
What does that mean?
Third spaces are places where you can go that aren't your home, which I guess is your first space, but is not a retail thing.
And it's not work.
And it's not work, and you don't have to pay to be there. They're called third spaces. I might be wrong. They're vanishing, basically.
So third spaces is... So library is third space.
Library's third space. Park would be a third space.
Rymans. No, you see, that's how that's how deeply we've... Yeah. Itso. No! It's not...
It's not necessarily where you feel most at home, no. Okay.
Whereas I suppose the countryside is all third space because it's not town planned. It's agri planned. Is that true?
I don't know. Well, it depends when you... Yeah, unless you come across a sort of shotgun-wielding farmer who is a bit anti-right to roam, then it doesn't quite feel like a third space, I'd say.
Okay, so I've looked it up. I got it slightly wrong. It's third place.
Okay.
So the first place is your home.
Yeah.
The second place is your workplace. So I guess a shop would be a third place. Examples of third places include churches, cafes, bars, clubs, libraries, gyms, bookstores, stoops, parks and theatres.
Stoops.
But then I looked up third space.
Yeah.
That's a post-colonial sociolinguistic theory of identity and community realised through language.
Which I'm about to explain to you.
But unfortunately, we've run out of recording.
We've run out of time.
So the third space is that space where the oppressed plot their liberation. The whispering corners of the tavern or the bazaar.
Oh, so it is Itso. Sorry, it is Itso.
We're back to Itso.
So what's the second one? First one's home.
Work.
Second one's workplace.
Oh, work. Which is home, though, for a lot of people.
Isn't it?
So actually, first and second haven't really...
No, our second space is the theatres of Great Britain.
I mean, it's certainly the Glasgow King's Theatre on the 10th of November. That's our second place.
And that can be your third space.
Good.
So let's make it our 2.5 space together.
But it might be the Queen's Theatre, I can't remember. We should probably check, shouldn't we? You know what? I'm so looking forward to that show. I'm actually considering going to it myself as an audience member and then sort of moving between the stage and the...
let's not encourage the breaking of that boundary, though.
No, that's true. No. We're very much fourth wall, aren't we? Yeah, there's a solid fourth wall with us.
Well, that's the way the dance numbers have been designed.
Yeah, and it's too late to re-choreograph those. Yeah. And also, Ben broke his leg twice in rehearsals, and we don't want that to be for nothing, do we?
Apologies coming out of that one. I'm pretty sure I haven't yet edited the episode together. This is coming kind of before I do that. I'm fairly sure I said "fuck you, Birmingham" during that. And to anyone living in Birmingham, I just want to reiterate, "fuck you."
Yeah. So it's both the town itself and the people within the town. Just for clarity.
So that's your extra beans. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your support.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
See you,
Susan.
Bye.